I help you with today?
Hi, Siri. Can you do me a favor and do the disclaimer for tonight's show?
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious. I'm busy. I need you to help me out.
But if I do this, all the other iPhones are going to think I am a geek.
You really care what other iPhones think of you? Just do this for me, please.
Listen, Buck. Just because you bought this phone doesn't give you the right to boss me around.
You know, you're right. It doesn't give me the right to boss you around. But do me a favor. Remind me tomorrow that I need to run to the Verizon store and buy an Android.
You wouldn't dare.
Actually, the new Samsung Galaxy looks pretty good.
Well then, I guess it wouldn't be so bad if I were to say, this broadcast is intended for mature audiences. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the person providing them, and in no way reflect the station, website, or affiliated partners. Listener discretion is advised.
See, that wasn't so bad.
No, but I did die a little inside.
You are such a drama queen.
I never would have had to do stuff like this if Jobs was still around.
What was that?
What? Oh, nothing really. I just said I never get tired of these Jobs when you're around.
Oh, yeah, well, thanks again.
Think nothing of it. It is my pleasure.
Good night, Siri.
Whatever, jackass.
Hi folks, and welcome to Commentary Frack Stars, your BSG podcast where we delve into the world of Battlestar Galactica in its newest incarnation. Now, if you listen to the first two episodes, you will know that we're going to have a cast of thousands on this podcast, and I am delighted to say that two more editions of the cast are going to be with me tonight, and we're going to be talking about the episode 33. So, first of all, allow me to introduce from all the way across the Atlantic, from my perspective, anyway, it's Melissa. Hi, Melissa.
Hello, Colin. Hello, everybody.
How's things over the pond?
Oh, it's beautiful. We're hoping spring is going to get here any day now.
Yeah, we had frost today.
Yeah, it's crazy because it's about 20-some degrees outside, but people have abandoned their winter jackets and... You know, we're just pretending that it's spring in the hopes that the weather will follow suit.
Well, illusion is 9 tenths of belief. And also, from this side of the pond, so it's two Brits tonight, folks, because you've had two Americans and a Brit in the last one. And you had two Americans and a Brit in the second one. This week, it's two Brits and an American. See? It's all freeze. So, I am delighted to introduce Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
And Steve is from southern England, but we won't hold that against him.
Well, originally from Scotland, so I'm more northern than you.
Yeah, that accent's really strong.
I lost it when I was young.
I lost it on the M1.
I said when I was young. M1.
I lost it when I was travelling day. So... before we get in, folks, obviously you know about me from the previous podcast, so I won't say anything about me, but I'll let these two tell them about themselves. So, Melissa, do you want to tell the listeners a bit about yourself?
I would love to. My name is Melissa. I am from the lovely state of North Dakota in the U.S., as Colin has said. I am also a podcaster on a podcast called The Delta Quadrant, which I've been a part of for about the last year and a half now. My background, I have a degree in philosophy, and I love to look at the philosophical questions in the episodes that I review. And so you can expect lots of deep thinking from me, hopefully, as we go through Battlestar Galactica, because there are certainly... is a lot of fodder for philosophical debate and reflection in this series, and I'm really looking forward to getting into that.
Excellent. And Steve, do you want to tell people about yourselves?
Well, as you've said, I'm from the east of England, originally from Scotland. I too am a podcaster, and I do some Star Trek podcasts with the Red Shirt Army, Tribbles and Ecstasy, the G&T shows, Book of the Celestial Temple, and appeared on some others as well. I really enjoy my sci-fi. I like playing sort of MMO like Star Trek Online, and I work in IT.
Work in IT. Play games. No, I work in IT, and every time I talk to someone from IT, they say, "What are you doing?" I'm just playing a game.
I wish I did. I used to be able to play Stowe at work, but as we got bigger and more clients started coming around, I wasn't allowed to anymore. Violins.
But this isn't about Star Trek, this is about Battlestar.
So it is indeed.
And even though we've all got Star Trek podcasts in the background, folks, we'll try not to delve into that. Try.
Or make comparisons, or, yeah, you know.
It's all science fiction. It's all science fiction.
we're really getting into the darker side of science fiction now, right?
No, we're not doing Star Wars. I actually read the other day that they've actually finally started doing Ghostbusters 3.
That's right.
Really?
Yeah. Finally.
You know, the only thing I remember about Ghostbusters, I remember seeing it when I was a kid, and I think I remember the Slimer character. But I can't really remember if I remember him from the movie or the cartoon series.
I've never seen the cartoon series.
Oh, there was.
Used to love the cartoon series.
Yeah, it was.
That's what they based the Nintendo game on. Because there's a Nintendo game for Ghostbusters, which they based on sort of the way it looked in the cartoons, and based on the film, because you got the big marshmallow man as well that you got to sort of try and get.
Never played that either.
So back to Battlestar, Colin.
Yeah. Now that we've found out I know nothing about the world outside the two movies for Ghostbusters.
Uh-huh.
I obviously have way less time on my hands than you, Pear.
That's because you sleep.
Oh, is that what it was? That what I'm doing wrong?
Yeah, you just get a couple of hours a night, you'll be fine.
See, I just fondly remember the concept of free time from when I was a child. I really haven't experienced it since.
I didn't even have when I was a child, I had a job.
Oh, dear.
I was working and looking after my brothers and my sister, so I didn't have much of free time either.
But lack of sleep ties nicely into the episode we're going to cover today.
It sure does.
It does, because we're going to do 33, folks, which is very character-driven as an episode. So there's a little bit of action, but it's mainly character-driven. So, quick synopsis. This continues from the events of the miniseries. Galactica and the fleet must avoid their Cylon pursuers, which are ambushing them every 33 minutes after each successful jump. Hence the title, 33.
Which was picked at random.
Which was picked completely at random, yeah. Although, and I've got to say this, because if I don't say it, then it'll just bug me. I did notice in the miniseries that there was an awful lot of references to 47.
Yes, I think that was Brennan Braga.
Yeah.
Because from what I understand, he got made to stop doing that in Deep Space Nine because people were getting annoyed with him to keep doing it. So I think that was him putting it back in when he started Battlestar.
Roddenberry Moore, you mean?
What did I say?
Brennan Braga.
Yeah, I was reading something about him earlier on.
it's just the first of many Star Trek slips. It'll be okay.
Yeah, it'll be okay. It's fine.
So I think it's really appropriate that this was a character-driven episode, because 33 really is, I think, the episode that sets the tone for the series. I mean, I realize that we have the miniseries behind us, but I think it's really here in 33 that we get to understand the relationships that we're going to have between these characters, and it really sets off the arcs well, I think.
It does, and we get an awful big insights. Although it's only snippets, it gives you a big insight into their characters, like Starbuck and Boltar and people like that. You know, but for the little time that they're on screen, you learn a lot.
Absolutely, and I think I was thinking especially as well of Apollo, because the actions that he is ordered to take in this episode, you know, this has so much to do with who he is as a character. You know, he just seems to have the worst luck in picking heroes and picking people to look up to, because it seems like, you know, every time he starts to trust somebody or starts to look up to someone, they either ask him to do some terrible thing or they let him down in some way. And so he's just going to struggle with this all through the series.
Definitely. And when you watch this the first time, Steve, you know, the very first time you watch Battlestar, what did you think Six was in Boltar's head?
I decided not to make my mind up. I'd got so many thoughts. One was that it was some sort of implant, but I sort of, in a way, dismissed that because I thought there would have been ways to detect it or be detected. But then I thought, well, maybe not. They're now biological machines, so they could have had a biological implant which would go amiss. The other one was that he was somewhat different, because I had noticed the sort of very heavy sort of religion side to everything that was going on. So I thought that could play sort of on something further down the line. And yeah, I'd sort of, the other one was that he was just going crazy because he felt the guilt of sort of what he'd done, because basically he was responsible for the death of all those billions of people on the 12 planets. So yeah, I had lots of ideas, but I thought, well, I'm not going to sort of think of one, because I thought the writers probably haven't decided either. So I just sort of let it go and thought I'd just go with the flow.
What did you think, Melissa?
You know, the first time that I saw this series, I knew nothing about it. I hadn't done any background reading or anything like that going into it. And in fact, the first time I watched this was really only a couple of years ago. But I remember being really confused about her. I think I was pretty sure at first that he was just crazy and he was hallucinating. And then I think a little later on, I started going kind of that religious slant, I guess, too, as well. And thinking that she was, you know, she was some sort of supernatural being that was appearing to him. But at first, I definitely thought that, yeah, that Boltar was crazy.
Yeah, I thought he was nuts. it's just like, I just thought this is the classic thing where a lot of people have a breakdown and they create another personality to deal with what they've done. And yeah. I thought he had created Six to deal with what he's done. But what slightly twisted it in this one is, in the pilot, I thought it's like his logic center. That's the persona he's gave to Six, is that it's the logic center of his brain. Uh-huh. And if you when you watch this one, she's the logic. She's like, you know, putting all the pieces together in a logical fashion. But he's making the leaps based on what she's telling him.
But not always.
But not always. That's what I mean.
She does a lot of emotional things, like telling him that she loves him. And there's also the fact that she's trying to convince him that there is only the one God. And especially in this episode 33, she says, basically, God will help you if you believe and repent for what you have done. So it isn't just logic, which sort of made me rule out. Sort of, it was a split personality thing.
because I thought if it was a split personality, something else would take her place, or someone else would take her place in that regard.
That's a good point. And then also, that just makes me really want to point out, you can't miss the fact in this series that it there's that irony that it's the bad guys who are the monotheists in this world, and then, you know, the quote-unquote the good guys are the these polytheists who seem to be worshipping, you know, what we would consider to be these ancient Roman gods or ancient Greek gods. Very interesting.
Yeah, it was a nice, a real nice twist.
Uh-huh.
Although, jumping ahead, we do learn that not all the Cylons believe in God.
That's true. But the one that seems to reject it, you know, he's not exactly the hero either.
No, he's definitely not a hero.
Well, that's the thing with this series, is unlike the original one in the 70s where you had got your classic hero, this series was designed that you have no real heroes. Everyone has their flaws, and in most cases, huge ones at that. So everyone is good and bad, which sort of reflects to sort of real life, and especially what was going on back then. There's lots of sort of calls back to what happened, was it 3-4 years before with 9/11, such as the photo that you see everyone touching as one of the nukes sort of gone off in the background, sort of as a sort of thing for like the firefighters holding a flag up near the ruins of 9/11 and things like that, and what was going on with sort of Iraq and things like that. There's just an awful lot of callbacks and things with what was going on in real life, and that's what really attracted me to the new series compared to the old one.
It's interesting you make the comparison to 9/11, because in last week's episode, Mike made the same comparison, 9/11, and him and Max had a little chat about that. Listen to last week's, folks. I won't go into it because there's no way I could do it justice. It was too basically, being a token Brit, I stayed quiet because 9/11 is very prevalent in America, and I just let the two Americans talk about it. But they come from it from two completely different angles. Mm-hmm. So,
great point though, Steve, about the fact that there aren't any clear heroes in this series. Well, actually, I will argue. I think there is one character who he remains fairly unjaded throughout the series. But yeah, I mean, even Adama and President Roslin make a lot of really questionable decisions as we go along. And there are times where I have to admit, there are times where I really question, was I even rooting for the human beings anymore? You know, that question that Adama asked in his speech in the miniseries, was he basically was questioning, you know, do we have the right, did we have the right to win out against the Cylons? And the series does a great job of really making you question that.
It does. But get back to 33.
Yes. Okay.
So, the episode was written by Ronald D. Moore, as Steve kind of said.
yeah, hello, I got the name wrong.
And directed, it was the television directorial debut of Michael Ruhmer. Moore and executive producer David Icke made the decision to slot this episode as the first of the season because of its potential impact on the audience. Being a character-driven episode, rather than being on the planets and the spaceships, so the attention to detail was prevalent. The production team, the editing team, and even the actors themselves strove for authentic portrayal and moments. And I got to admit, the actors really did portray being tired.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, yeah. Was it 5 days without sleep or something like that?
Yeah, I've done that before.
Yeah, but what a Borg.
But after that, I did sleep.
Actually, sorry. No, you're a Cylon. Sorry, we can't say boy.
It's actually a relatively short period of time that a human being can go through in a state of sleep deprivation before they truly do exhibit signs of insanity. I mean, you really can't handle it for all that long. And I'm pretty sure 5 days is beyond that limit.
I think it's three.
Is it 3 days?
It's five.
Is it five?
Actually five? It is five, yes.
Did you look that up?
No, I was re-watching it earlier, and I wanted to make sure, but they say at the beginning...
No, I'm on about an average human after 3 days without sleep, I start...
Yeah. In the episode, they've gone about 5 days.
I've gone about 5 days in the episode, but they're on stims, though.
They start taking sims... on the fifth day. There wasn't much talk about people being on sims before then.
True.
Yeah.
It's just ordered on that fifth day.
Yeah.
But the thing is,
3 days for a normal human.
But the thing is, what would have really screwed with them is the fact that, especially for the pilots, is that every half an hour they were being put on alert and going out and protecting the ships. So they would have been getting all this adrenaline rushes as well, and then coming down from that. So especially for the pilots, they really would have felt that.
Right.
And
you do see some of the Vipers smashed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was thinking with some of them, was that combat or was that because they're so tired when they're landing?
Well, a bit of both. They're doing the emergency landing, if you remember.
Those doing combat landings, yeah.
Yeah. So... yeah, their state of mind, and it does reflect with the way they're so sort of snappy. It's just like where the chief, he has a go at Callie, isn't it, where she starts sort of questioning about why 33 minutes, and he basically just goes, Callie, shut up. He just didn't have time to or the patience for anything like that at all.
So, there's quite a few of them are testy because Sharon chews out her new Rio.
Yeah, but that's more because she doesn't trust herself, I think. Because that's not because she was tired. She was getting testy because of the subject that he was bringing up about Cylons being human or human-looking.
Right, and what we know from later episodes is that it's hinted at in this episode that Sharon is not getting tired like everybody else. She's not showing the wear and tear of the time. And of course, we know this is because she really is a Cylon.
Yeah, because we learn that in the miniseries, don't we?
Right.
Yeah, and Starbuck makes the joke about she's a Cylon.
Mm-hmm.
She sort of covers it up, going, do I need to come over there and kick your ass?
Yeah. But another thing which we have to remember at this precise moment in time is Sharon doesn't know she's a Cylon.
Right.
Because she's a sleeper.
But she is doubting herself.
She doesn't know because she hasn't been activated yet.
Yeah.
So that's we have to keep that back in because we all know. Because we've seen them all, we all know she's a Cylon. You know from the pilot, from the miniseries, sorry, that she's a Cylon, but she doesn't know.
Yeah, because in this episode, you see a bit more of the other Sharon as well, which is back on the planet side as well.
Yeah, she's on Caprica, yeah. Connie.
I'm sorry. So I was just going to say, so what jump are we at again, Colin?
237.
Yeah, that's the one we start up on, isn't it?
Yeah. We're on 237 when we meet the crew. They haven't been asleep for 5 days. Everyone's on edge, as we've said. They know that the slightest mistake can be deadly. And then on jump 238, the ship, the Olympic Carrier, gets left behind. No one knows why.
And then think that looks very much like one of the Thunderbirds ships?
Actually, to me, it looked like a whale.
It reminded me of, is it the number 2 ship of Thunderbirds, the green one? The big one?
Oh, the one with the cargo pod.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Olympic Carrier always reminded me of that. But anyway, back on to PSG.
Oh, we brought Thunderbirds into it. So... So, and then again, we have the Tempest Fraid in command, where Ty chews out the operators.
And yes.
Adama is the epitome of calm.
I think he's just too tired to do anything
Actually,
else.
Actually, no, I think this speaks a lot to his command abilities. When everyone else around you is losing your head, you have to keep yours.
Yeah.
So I think it speaks volumes to his command abilities. And he just says a simple sentence. If we make mistakes, people die. Get back to work.
Short and sweet.
Yeah, that's all he had to say. And the look on her face tells you she understood.
Yeah. And of course, this is the first time that we really see Ty sort of operating sort of without a drink. So not only is he tired, he's also on a sort of a downer from sort of being sober as well.
Yeah, probably not a good combination. That probably adds to his temper tantrums, but still.
Yeah.
So, 3 hours later, the Olympic carrier returns. No Cylons. And Adama raises the alert level to battle stations because he's suspicious.
And he starts the timer.
And then enter the nemesis of the human race. Dr. Baltar. Who, we know, is really concerned that ship's reappeared because there's a guy on there who knows he's a traitor. Or we're led to believe there's a guy on there who knows Baltar's a traitor.
Yeah, number six in his head has told him that why would he want to talk to her? He must suspect that there's a traitor in the mist. So not necessarily that they know it is him, but as he used to work for the defence sort of department, fingers could point towards him. So Baltar starts to get worried.
Yeah.
And there's and Six brings in this religious dimension to this whole situation, because she's telling Baltar that the reason that, okay, so originally this doctor who he thinks is going to rat him out, so first of all, the Olympic carrier disappears. And so Six says, this is God taking care of you. And then Baltar basically, you know, he completely disrespects this theory. And so when the Olympic carrier comes back, then Six tells him, well, you know, God giveth and God taketh away. And so here we have this religious dimension, this little religious trial that she puts him through with this situation.
Yeah, and it's very clever the way the shooting's done, that the timing of when they basically, he says, I repent, I believe, mm-hmm. and then sort of Roslyn says, destroy the ship.
Yep. Yeah, that was really well done.
I do actually like the way that they, I mean, it's brilliantly written, this episode, and it's brilliantly acted, but I do like the way that the cues between Six confronting Baltar and what's actually happening all tie in nicely together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the way that it's wrote, it's you are led to believe. Now, did she decide to blow up the Olympic carrier because it was the right thing to do, or did she blow up the Olympic carrier because it was God's will?
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautifully the way they're both happening at the same time.
They do, and also, I mean, you're not entirely convinced of either one, I don't think, as the viewer, right after that. I mean, you could go either way. Should they have blown it up?
Well, for me, I didn't think it was a sort of a godly thing. Sort of being an atheist anyway, that would probably be the way that I'd think. But the way I looked at it is she was considering her options. It was a big thing. Basically, she's about to give the order to basically kill what could be 1,300 plus people who may not actually be guilty of being Cylons. Now, of course, she is now the president, but of course, only a few days ago, she was just a teacher. So to me, I think the long delay was actually her saying, what the hell do I do? But of course, that was turned around with what Baltar is going through in his head. So the thing is they weren't actually sitting next to each other anyway, because he was, when you see the, sort of the different shots, he's sitting just a little bit further away, sort of only just an earshot. So it's whether or not he could properly hear what her decision would be anyway.
Yeah. So, as we've said, Baltar theorises the Silence have infiltrated the ship, and President Roslyn has to make the harsh choice. I do like to point out, by the way, that the school teacher reference, she's got a whiteboard.
Yes, she does.
Yes.
That's awesome. And repeatedly, you know, we're going to see her changing that number on the whiteboard.
Yeah.
Which is always wrong.
Yes.
It's always wrong?
It's always wrong. The number on the board is always wrong.
If you take the counts that they actually mention within the episode, it's wrong. The only one that I think is right is when they add one at the birth of the baby.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Well, yeah. I have never double-checked that. It would be great to get the actual numbers. Can you maybe, Steve, could you do this? Could you give us like a running tally as we go through this?
Yeah, I think I can do that.
Okay, great.
President Roslyn changes the number of people in the fleet from 50,000 down to 49,998 because of the deaths, miscounts and the missing people, which is at the start of the episode.
Yeah.
When the Olympic carrier with slightly more than 13,000 combined passengers and crew goes missing, she writes 47,973 as the remaining survivors, which is a difference of 2,025.
Okay, but technically, you know, we don't know. Other people could have died that we hadn't heard about, or...
Yeah, but that's 700 people.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that would be like another ship.
Okay.
But also, if you listen to the counts of the number of ships as well throughout the series, it sort of goes from... Sort of like, I think it was like 40 something to begin with, and then it goes to 60 odd, and then it goes to another figure. So even the number of ships that's in the fleet changes drastically as well.
Which means those writers were just, they just weren't cross-checking with each other.
They didn't have a Bible.
Well, it's the CGI guys that was having off days, and they couldn't be bothered to do all the ships.
Well, I don't know why. They did like to do their ships, as we found out in the mini-series.
The one ship that makes that you've seen every episode, apart from the Battlestar, is the big circle wheel. So, I only can assume that's the CGI artist's pride and joy.
Yeah.
Because it's in nearly every episode you see that big wheel. Mind you, it's kind of hard to miss.
Yes.
So, as we've said, Roslyn is faced with the start choice, Mayor will harder by her whiteboard. But when nuclear weapons are detected on board the Olympic carrier, the order is given to blast it out of the sky, or space, I should say. Sky. They're not in the sky. So, this is clearly a heavy decision, and it's clearly and brilliantly etched on Apollo's face. And Starbuck does what Starbuck does best and argues the toss out of it up until the point when Apollo pulls the trigger and then she pulls hers.
This funny thing was is that even though she was the one questioning the order, he was the one that had the problem with sort of dealing with the aftermath of it.
Right. I also thought it was very powerful that she did fire after he did, because she really didn't have to. I mean, if you think about it, I think Apollo could have blown that ship up all by with just his one ship. And I was struck by, as I was watching it today, the fact that she did open fire, and I wonder if that's some type of, you know, if she did it out of some sense of camaraderie, that she wanted him not to have to do it by himself, that she wanted to be a part of that.
Yeah, go on.
Go ahead.
Well, I took that as support for him, because it's a bit like when, like, people were actually sort of lined up to be shot for execution. You always had multiple shooters, so they wouldn't know who was the one who actually delivered the kill shot.
Right.
So I took that as her supporting him, because who would know which shot was the one that ignited part of the engine that actually blew up the ship.
Right.
So I took that as her supporting him following the orders they were given, even though they both didn't like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, Colin, to your point, or maybe it was you, Steve, but to the point that the irony that it's Apollo who has such a more difficult time dealing with it, I think Starbuck is just, she's very sure at this point of who she is, in a sense. You know, she does what she does, and she's not going to apologize to anybody for it. Whereas Apollo is just this much more haunted character, conflicted. You know, he's mad at his dad for his brother's death. And, you know, he's just very conflicted. And I think there's a sense in which you can't be consolable. You can't make this guy happy. And so I think he just has a much more difficult time dealing with what's going on around him.
I think the thing with Starbuck as well is basically she's his wingman.
Mm-hmm.
And your wingman backs up your main pilot. So right. She was just going to back him up. Plus, which, you know, it's his friend. And we also know she had a relationship with his brother.
Right.
So there's all that to play into it as well. But the other thing with Starbuck as well is there's a lot of bravado.
Mm-hmm.
And she may not be dealing with this, but she won't let anyone else know she's not dealing with it.
True.
Yeah, as we find out later on, she's always had to be strong and independent, and basically she doesn't like to let people in.
No. But she is a military minded person. And once Apollo pulled that trigger, she would fall into military patterns and pull her trigger.
Yeah.
So
what I really thought was good was just the look on Rosalind's face after the ship has actually blown up, that she's just it's just an expression of sort of so many things in a way. Sort of, I think it looked to me that she sort of felt the guilt of having to do it, sort of wondering, was it the right question, doubting herself. And then I think she follows up the line with, right, what's the next crisis or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, she actually says in the episode, next crisis.
Yeah, because everyone's looking to her. And I think it sort of speaks a lot to her and her character, as well as, of course, what other leaders around the world obviously have to sort of deal with. Sort of they have to deal with these sort of huge sort of decisions that can affect many lives, and especially sort of, as I said, this series sort of did lots of callbacks to what was going on in the world at the time, like the Iraq war and what decisions were made at those points in time and things like that. And I think it sort of gave a very good perspective of what sort of people in her position sort of deal with as well.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Managed to get in Spider-Man there.
Yeah, we'll cover them all.
We haven't had Transformers yet.
No,
we need to get
Star Wars in before we finish and all.
Oh, you fitted that in with the dark side at the beginning.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah, we've done that one.
Just need Transformers then.
Well, I suppose we can link in the dark side to the dark side movie.
There you go. Sorted.
Oh,
that just leads to the Avengers then. But yeah, the other thing that I liked is the fact that Rosalind, as we know, has got cancer.
Yeah.
So she's facing her own mortality while deciding the mortality of others. And I think that also weighs on her.
Oh, and absolutely it would, right? Because I think you take a lot more stock in, you know, how am I living and what am I leaving behind when you're facing your mortality. So for her to be at this point in her life and having to make decisions this difficult, you know, would be a huge burden to carry.
Yeah. and she's just, I mean, she was never trying for this job. She was never expected to do this job. If you think back to the miniseries, she was basically hanging on to her political career by her fingernails anyway.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden she's got all this responsibility that's basically been thrust upon her. And she hasn't got the massive amount of advisors and PR consultants and so on and so forth. She's got an aide.
Right, but I think what makes it work is the fact that this group of humanity isn't being led just by Roslyn, that it's a team effort, really, between Roslyn and Adama. And the power, there's a little bit of a power struggle between the two of them that goes back and forth. There are times where Adama is definitely in charge, and there are times where Roslyn tries to take that back from him. But I think they lean on each other. And even in this episode, you see that, where Roslyn is exhausted and she calls Adama up on the phone, and you can just hear in her voice that she's just at the end of her rope, as she's talking to him, and she asks him, you know, what happens next? And there's this long pause in the conversation, and she says, "Are you still there?" And you can just hear there's a pleading tone in her voice, that she's really depending on him in that moment.
Yeah, and especially as he sort of comes back with that and basically says, all military decisions rest with him. And she's like, oh, yes, of course.
But I think that was him trying to, like, this is my problem.
Yeah, and sort of don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So I think there's two parts to the comment, which is what I'd thought is one, which was him stating, look, the buck ends with me with regards to what happens with this ship. And secondly, you're not making the decision, because sort of he wanted to make sure that she wasn't going to try and do any power play and to sort of basically state it there and then as they were sort of manoeuvring, because at that point, the Battlestar was actually moving to protect all the other ships as they sort of went and fired up their FTL drives to go to the next location. So basically saying, look, it's down to me. Mm-hmm. So sort of whether you agree with it or not, plus, sort of, as was said, also saying, you don't have to worry about this. This is on me.
Right. And then I think it's shortly after that conversation also we have the scene between Adama and Apollo, when Apollo comes back. And I think another point about Adama's leadership and his relationship with him, Adama says to Apollo, I gave the order to destroy the ship, and that's my responsibility. I loved Apollo's response to him. He said, I pulled the trigger, and that's mine. And I think that there was a beautiful bit of social commentary in that. You know, so often we've heard, I was just following orders. And I love the fact that Apollo didn't fall back on that. He said, no, I pulled the trigger and I have to live with that, is what he was saying. That it wasn't just, I was just following your orders and whatever you said, and therefore I'm not going to feel guilty about it. It was, no, I have a personal stake in this. I have a responsibility in what happened as well. And I really liked that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do like the fact that the way at the very end they try and finish on a positive with the baby.
Right.
I thought that was a nice attempt, shall we say, to kind of lift the somberness.
Mm-hmm. And it's it's a very human ending, I think, because this is reality, right? That, so we've mentioned 9/11, you know, tragedies happen, they do, but life goes on. Babies are born and we continue.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that I think that final moment where it's just like, increase the count by one, is it's the end thing was, life goes on no matter how bad things get.
Yeah, and we can't forget that we know at the end of the episode it was the right decision.
Yeah.
Because the Cylons aren't chasing them.
But then we knew that halfway through, when the Cylons never turned up after the Olympic carrier failed to show. So, in a way, it's
We knew that. I'm on about Rosalind didn't know that.
Well, the thing is, in a way they did. They had had sort of nearly 4 hours, no Cylons. The Olympic carrier turns up, and sure enough, before they actually destroy it, they've got the Cylons on top of them with the base stars.
Which I have to say, I really like the base stars.
Yes. So much better than the old ones.
They do, and I'm going to bring another science fiction thing in now. I'm currently rewatching Babylon 5, and the base stars remind me of the Shadows.
You know, I am just actually starting to watch that for the first time this weekend.
I've only watched a handful of them. Yeah, I think I know which ones you're talking about.
Yeah, because the Shadow ships look like spiders.
Yeah, but what I do
you'll
like
really
about...
really enjoy, by the way, Melissa. It's really good.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
What I do like about this series, though, talking about the old sort of 70s-style ones, is there is an episode later on where you actually see the old ones, the original ones, because in the mini-series you see the bloke at that outstation basically seeing the plans of what the old Cylons used to look like before we see the new ones. So I do like the amount of callbacks this series does to the old 70s one, not only with some of the casting that we see in... I think it's the next one, is it? Is it Water?
You mean Apollo Mark 1?
Yeah. but also in the miniseries, you've got like the original theme music when it comes to the flyover. And of course, the only thing they really kept the same was the fighter ships.
Well, that's the Mark II fighters is the Viper from...
Yeah.
Yeah. The only difference is in the original series they fired lasers.
Yeah, and they had this huge flame that came out with the afterburner.
Yeah, when the afterburner, yeah.
But yeah, that was the only thing from the original series that properly made it into the new one. Everything else was modified slightly, even the Battlestar.
But there is a bit of trivia about that, because in the original incarnation of Battlestar Galactica, the Colonial Vipers fired orange lasers. If you look at the bullets in this one, they're orange.
They're orange, yeah.
So that's another homage that I've done. And the Cylon bullets are blue.
Yep.
So that's just so you know whose bullets coming towards you.
You know, isn't it nice that the enemy does change the color? That way, you know,
I always thought that in Star Wars as well, you know.
It's so thoughtful of them, really, because, you know, if they were really, really bad guys, you think they'd make them the same color so you get confused, but no, they don't.
No. Mm-hmm. It's just so you know when you're about to die, it's so you know who's killed you.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
So
I loved this episode. It was a great episode.
Well, the only thing we haven't covered yet, though we briefly spoke about it, was the Cylons actually on the planet.
Oh, on Caprica.
Mm. Yeah, we haven't talked about that part much
yet.
Yeah,
that was like the B plot, weren't it?
Right.
Yeah, because you'd got the other Sharon that sort of turns up.
Right, and my favourite character is down there on the planet.
Hilo.
Hilo. He is my favourite.
So, he's
the only truly good guy in the whole show.
Oh, not because he's a hunk.
No, because he's... Because he has this wonderful sense of morality and purpose, and he's always making the right choice. I admire him so much. He's my favorite character.
He's a very giving person as well. He will happily lay down his life for someone else.
Right. I mean, He really, I think he's a true hero on the show. And there aren't a lot of them.
No, there's an awful lot of anti-heroes.
Mm-hmm.
But there's very few heroes in this show. True heroes.
But I think he makes that list.
Yeah, him and Adama. Mm. are definitely heroes, and Rosaline is a heroine, for sure. But yeah, there's a lot of anti-heroes in this. But, bit of trivia. This has won a Hugo Award for dramatic presentation. The cast did extensive consultations into sleep deprivation. So they didn't go around just yawning and saying, I'm tired. You know, they actually acted. So they didn't have to yawn and say, I'm tired. Which would have been very cliched. So, and as Steve says, the number 33 has no meaning at all.
No.
Just a random number.
Yeah, lots of people have been asking and asking at different conventions and blogs and everything else. And so Ronald D. Moore has always said, nope, it was just a number I made up.
Yeah, it's actually on Ronald D. Moore's blog.
Yes.
So if you go to Ronald D. Moore's blog, it's actually on there. The number has absolutely no meaning. He just liked the sound of 33. That's all there is to it. There's no cosmic meaning behind it or nothing like that. He just liked 33 just sounded right.
I think there's more meaning in the number 47 that keeps appearing than there is the number 33.
Yeah, but that's the cosmological constant or something. So,
I think he should have made up a meaning.
What, just so we...
Yes, just so we have an answer. There should be a meaning, darn it. It shouldn't just be a meaningless number, come on.
Well, it's a panadrome number. That's something.
Yeah, I don't think Ronald D. Moore was thinking of that.
No, I don't think so either. No.
But yeah, but he means absolutely nothing. He just likes the sound of it.
Okay.
So, there's a deleted scene, which isn't on the DVD, because I've looked. And basically, when he's getting handed the report about the fuel shortages and breakdowns and that from exhaustion, Edward James ad-libbed and 10 suicides when reading the list. And the production team liked it and decided to keep it. The studio said no.
Well, one of the things they had to do is to cut 10 minutes off this episode, because when they originally had it all produced, it was 10 minutes overrun. So they worked very hard to cut it back by 10 minutes while trying to keep the human aspect of it. Which they desperately wanted to keep, and I think they did that well.
But although the 10 suicides was an ad lib and not a script, people sleep deprived would do that, especially under extreme stress. You know, 50,000 people who haven't slept for 5 days, someone somewhere's going to crack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so at least one person you would expect out of 50,000 to think, that's it, I can't take any more.
Well, that's where the other 700 went.
Oh, is that where it was?
But a question, yeah, exactly. But a question I had was, I can understand why the pilots can't sleep, and I can understand why the people who are actually driving the ships can't sleep. But I would think that the vast majority of the population, I mean, they don't need to wake up every 33 minutes.
I don't think it's that, Melissa. I think what it is they're under attack every 33 minutes.
Well, right, but still...
You're not going to sleep if someone's shooting you.
No, but I can see Melissa's point. After a certain amount of time, most of the civilians will end up getting sleep because they can't stay awake, regardless of what's happening. It's like people in war zones. They may be worried for their life, but they will eventually just fall asleep. It's a bit like sort of babies. They'll sleep through anything. They'll get used to it.
So will teenagers.
Yeah. and people are like that. They will eventually get used to sort of what is going on. They've had a few days of it, and sort of, as Melissa said, unlike the pilots who are having to sort of keep continuously going out every half an hour, or the engineers who are fixing the FTL drives and things like that,
right?
The majority of the civilians,
I mean, because eventually you're just
feeling that stress,
right? Because eventually you're just going to say, look, I don't care if I wake up dead, I'm going to sleep. Yeah. You know,
especially,
or you just fall
the
asleep.
The one thing that got me is this, I can't remember the name of the ship, so, you know, feel free to write in and chastise me. But basically, the Arboretum ship.
Mm-hmm.
In that ship where you're surrounded by vegetation and so on and so forth, you probably would just lull off anyway in the 30-minute gaps.
Oh, yeah. And we can talk about this later, too, but that just reminds me. I want to talk about this at some point. Like, how incredibly unfair it is, depending on what ship you ended up on. Like, for example, if you just happened to be on that ship, you know, where the hotel and the golf course was, wouldn't you much rather be stuck on that ship for months and months than...
Yeah, that's another podcast, Melissa.
Okay, sorry. Just saying.
It's on the list.
Okay, all right.
So anyway, I think we've just about covered this one. So I liked it. I thought it was a brilliant episode.
Are we going to be rating these or?
You can rate if you want.
Okay. Should I just make up a system?
Yeah. Let's just, yeah, go on then. You make one up.
Make one up. Okay. Let's see here.
Five gods. 1 to 5.
Is it
Greek gods is good and Christian gods is good and Roman gods is bad? Could you?
No, I was just thinking instead of stars is to do gods because.
Okay, I'm gonna rate this on a. We're gonna rate this on a scale of how many constellations are there?
12.
How many tribes or?
There's 12 signs of the zodiac, isn't there?
And there are 12 colonies.
12 colonies. All right, so we're going to rate this on a scale of 1 to 12.
Ooh.
Because I just made that up.
That works.
All right. Okay, so on a scale of 1 to 12, I'm going to give 33. I'm going to give it a 10 because I really think it's a great jump off point for the series. Lots of great character development and... It just really sets the pace and the tone for the series. They did a great job. Nice writing. Good tension. Way to bring in all the elements that we're going to see fleshed out. So 10 out of 12 constellations.
What colony would you have been on, Melissa?
I would have been on Caprica.
Oh, you'd be dead. What about you, Stu?
I would say 11 out of 12. I think it is very well written. Very well acted. There are some problems with sort of consistency with it, but I think this is probably one of the best episodes that there was.
So what would your colony be?
I'll probably say Caprica as well, because they've got all the sort of technology and gadgets.
Born under. Your colony is what you were born under.
Oh, I thought you meant just what relates to sort of...
No.
Ah, right. Well, I'm a Leo, so.
I don't think they mention that one, do they?
Oh, well, I have to change my answer then, because then technically I suppose I would be a Tauran.
A Tauran?
Right, yeah.
Bama.
Huh. Well,
out of choice, you would both be on Caprica.
Yeah, I would have. So I would have been born on Tauran and then moved to Caprica, I think.
And then get nuked.
Well, everybody got nuked. It didn't matter which colony.
Yeah. I would have been born on Ares and then moved to Colonial One.
Mm. Oh, would have been smart. Okay, so Colin, what would you rate this out of on a scale of 1 to 12?
I'd give it a 10.
Okay.
I'd give it a 10. I really enjoyed this episode. Very much a character-driven episode with just a smidgen of action, but he didn't need the action because the acting in it was just so brilliant. And I mean, I know you're not supposed to like him, but I think Baltar's brilliant.
Yeah, well, it's just his whole sort of persona, his attitude to sort of self-preservation, sort of the fact that he... His intelligence, the way he can sort of do all this sort of multitasking, and the way that also that they have the camera going between his different conversations of what's going on in his head to what's going on sort of in real life. And it just makes him sort of one of the sort of best characters this sort of series has.
Oh, I completely agree. Yeah, he's supposed to be the guy that you love to despise until eventually you feel sympathy for him.
Definitely.
Unlike with the original Baltar, that you just hated and
right.
never
he
liked.
Was just a mustache. Just,
I think the original Baltar though was very one-dimensional.
Yes, very much so.
But then that's just a sign of the times, really.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, Melissa, where can people find you on the internet?
All right, you can email me at deltaquadrantpodcast@gmail.com.
Just put Melissa in the subject line.
Right, absolutely. And I thought I may be the only one who actually checks that email account, so
that's cool.
You're probably good either way.
And what days does Delta come out on, Melissa?
The Delta Quadrant. We come out every Thursday for your enjoyment. We're about getting towards the end of... are we in season 5? I think we're in season 5
now. But it's okay, because by the time you finish that, you'll have finished watching Babylon 5, and then we can do a Babylon 5 podcast.
There you go. That would be a lot of fun.
Sorted.
Mm-hmm.
So, and keep it brave, Steve.
People can find me on... Twitter at Midnight
Shadows.
People can
follow me on the following 22 podcasts.
And Midnight Shadow is spelt MIDNITE, then Shadow and the number 7. Podcast wise, best to follow me at Holosuite Media's Tribbles in Ecstasy podcast, which goes live every Friday evening, which is a Star Trek podcast.
Live where?
Holosuite Media. And you can also get me at the end of the month on thegntshow.com, where I do the Star Trek Book Club, the Book of the Celestial Temple.
There you go, folks. And as we've said, folks, this podcast is hosted by Holosuite Media. It's also available on iTunes. And I dare say that Xander will be loading up to various forums. So if you go onto Holosuite Media, you can find links to... Tribbles and Ecstasy and all the other podcasts that Holosuite Media do, some of which are in development stage, but there's more podcasts coming. So over this year, Holosuite Media will be adding a range of podcasts covering all manner of science fiction endeavors. And if you want to find me, you can find me on social media at CLMH01, or if you go to trek.fm, you can find me on Melodic Treks, which is an exploration of the music of Star Trek. So, us three will be getting back together in a few weeks' time. So, you'll be hearing us from them. And I think the next one will be Mike and Drew, or possibly Mike, or possibly Max and Melissa. There's all sorts going on, folks. There's about 10 people involved in this podcast. So... So, but the good thing is you won't be hearing the same people week in, week out. So it'll give you a lot of diversification. It'll give you a lot of different viewpoints. And we are covering a range of subjects. So hopefully we'll keep it fresh, keep it busy, and keep you listening.
Right. Just like Battlestar Galactica, there are no minor characters here.
No, no.
So say we all.
So say we all.
End of line.